The term art collector usually brings to mind names like Frick, Getty, and Rockefeller, but in recent years, a new name, Vogel, has been added to the list. Herb and Dorothy Vogel amassed an important collection of contemporary art on quite modest salaries. He was a postal worker. She was a librarian. They stored thousands of important works in their tiny Manhattan apartment before donating them to the National Gallery of Art. A new documentary, Herb and Dorothy, directed by Megumi Sasaki, tells their story, and it opens this Friday, June the 5th, in the Cinema Village and Beekman Theater. And I'm very pleased to welcome Herb, Dorothy, and Megumi to the show today. Hello. Welcome.
Hello.
Megumi, how did you first hear about the Vogels, and why did you want to make a film about them?
Well, first, I was working on the assignment for NHK Japanese Public Television, and that was to cover the exhibition of Christo and Jean-Claude, the artist. It was in National Gallery, Washington, D.C., 2002, and all the works, I learned all the works were part of Herb and Dorothy's collection, and somebody told me who they were. And I was really, I felt almost a shock in my heart. What an amazing story. I really want to do something with this story. And I went down to bookstores of the museum and just wondering what to do with it. But the book, the catalog stayed in my bookshelf for next 2.5 years, and their story stayed in the corner of my heart, too.
And then one day, like their decision to collect art. Dorothy, when did you and Herb begin collecting art?
We began in 1962. That's when we got married. When I met my husband, he was interested in art, and I didn't know anything about it, never studied it, but through him, I became interested.
And you, for a while, studied painting. So was the first thought that the two of you would paint?
Yes. I took courses in painting and drawing, and we got a studio we shared with another artist, and we wanted our works to be seen, and we put all of our works up on our walls. But then we started to buy art, and we started to take down our work, put up the work of other artists, and pretty soon we had a collection, and we realized that they were better than we were, so we gave it up.
Well, it was early 60s. Abstract expressionism was no longer affordable. You were buying the artists, Herb, that were affordable at that time?
At the time that Dorothy and I were doing it, they were virtually unknown. And I'm surprised that so many of them are well known.
So you didn't make a conscious decision to put together a major collection?
No.
But you must have had some reason for picking the art that you picked. Had you studied art history?
Yes.
And you're buying artists who were not, as you said, not well known. Although the first artist you bought was John Chamberlain. He was kind of well known at that point. But you bought a small piece by him.
When I met my husband, he already bought artwork before I met him. And the first piece he bought was something by Picasso.
So he Not had, an unknown artist.
No. And he always said he didn't know if it went up or down. It was a lithograph of a bull, an abstract bull. And that particular edition was on the cover of a book of Picasso lithographs. And the Museum of Modern Art had a copy of that same lithograph. So I think in the beginning he chose pretty well.
The eye was there from the start. But you were working for the post office. How were you able to afford Picasso lithographs?
I don't know.
In the 1950s, it wasn't that expensive.
Mm-hmm. But then when you decided to buy art, you lived on?
He lived on my salary, and we used his salary for buying art. Then when we retired, we did the same thing. We lived on my pension and used his pension to buy art.
Did you deal with dealers, or did you go straight to the artists?
We bought many different ways, mostly through the artists themselves, but through some dealers. Sometimes a dealer would even give us a phone number and said we should call the artist ourselves. And we bought a few at auction, not too many, some at art benefits.
And what were the criteria that applied? Did you want to own pieces that you felt were important, or was it just, I like this?
Just that we liked it. We had no idea they were going to become important. That happened, and it was wonderful, but that's not why we bought it.
Well, Herb, in the film, we get the impression that you and Dorothy had different philosophies about how to buy art. You wanted to buy in bulk. She wanted to buy individual pieces.
That is correct. she would be satisfied with one or two. I wouldn't be satisfied with 100. I wanted more.
Well, were you able to do that? After all, you were still only, you were using your salary as a postal worker.
I
don't know how much you were making, but I know postal workers don't make in the many thousands a week.
Well, in those times, they were making a lot less than they're making now. But I have no complaints. All I can say is I'm happy it's happening.
Well, how many pieces did you buy in a typical year? Or did it change over the years?
It varied. It was sometimes we got a few things in a week. Sometimes we go a few weeks without getting anything. Sometimes in one day we might get 10 things. So it's, there's no pattern.
Did you both have to love something?
No.
So you did. So you might say, well, last time it was your choice, this time
it's my choice? No. He was better at selecting certain types of work than I was. He sort of responded to more flamboyant works, very flashy colors. And I sort of went for the more cerebral, hard edge.
Well, that was the style at the time. Donald Judd was never flashy.
No, but he was good at buying things like Linda Bengalis, and there's this artist Charlie Clough. He was very good at picking artists who were more in the abstract expressions vein, and I was a little bit better at the Solowit, for instance.
At what point did you realize, Herb, that you were creating a serious collection?
Oh, that's a good question.
I mean, people must have come to your home and said, oh, my.
It's when people start asking to come and see it.
Uh-huh. And did that change the way you went about buying art?
No.
Because at a certain point you had to feel like you were doing something important other people were noticing.
No, we really bought for ourselves. And that really, I don't see how that influenced us. It was nice that they appreciated what we had.
Megumi, the problem you probably had in doing this was trying to show what motivated these two people as collectors, but also getting across just how different this is. There was a couple, if I remember, in the 50s who bought Rothkos because Sidney Janis told them it was a good idea and they didn't know where to put them. They slipped them under the bed. But how do you get across visually two people going out and deciding which piece of art to buy?
It was a huge challenge. Herb and Dorothy are very private people, and it took us, I think, a few years, right, to build the relationship. And it was almost impossible for them to take me to the artist's studio. This is a very special, sacred place. And they would never have allowed me to bring a camera and shoot how, you know, they interact with the artists.
Although we do see that on the film.
Yes, that's really the last year. It took me 4 years to make this film. And at the last year, 1 year, we did more than half of the filming. So it took 4 years, but that 4 years, I think, it's a natural, very organic length of time it took to make this film.
And you spoke to several of the artists whose work is in their collection, like Christo and John Clough, and also Richard Tuttle, Lucio Pozzi, Linda Bengalis, Chuck Close, and some others. What did they tell you about their first impressions of Herb and Dorothy when they showed up to buy pieces?
I think as soon as I bring up their name, Herb and Dorothy Vogel, they sort of all kind of smile in a very affectionate way. And artist has a very different recollection of them.
You mean when you heard the story from Herb and Dorothy, you heard one story, the artist told you a different story?
No, I mean each artist has a different, I think, stories, anecdotes.
Uh-huh.
But I felt that the doors really open wide in a friendly way as soon as I bring their names.
Well, they all told you that when Herb and Dorothy showed up, they were struggling artists. Now they may be famous, but they were struggling artists. And it was, and you knew, Dorothy, that you were helping these people out?
Of course. But
sometimes you bought on the installment plan?
Many times. But when they became more expensive, many times they made it more affordable that we could continue So we try to do as much as we can with the people already in the collection. At one point, we just weren't interested in adding new artists to the collection. We're just interested in continuing on with the few that we had in depth.
Because you'd also become personal friends with some of these
people. Many cases.
So at a certain point, Herb, you had acquired more work than you could display in your tiny apartment. How did you handle that?
With great difficulty.
Did you rotate what you displayed?
Never.
No, because it's safer to keep it where it is. When you move things around, things can happen. If we were going to take something down for an exhibition, there'd be a space, we put something else up. But we didn't like to handle it.
And you, in the film, you talk about having a solo with a major piece that was too big for your apartment, so you traded it down.
Yeah.
You regret that now.
Well, we'd mind to trade it up, but we should have kept the original one and gotten another one. But all collectors have stories of things they should have.
As the years passed, many of these works became very valuable. Did you have to insure it, the collection?
We never got insurance because in order... you'd have to pay a lot of money, and we'd rather use the money to buy more art.
Yeah, but you could have had a fire or something. I once had a fire in my apartment, and I lost pretty much everything.
We didn't let people smoke in our apartment. And we were very careful, luckily.
Selling just a few of those works could have made you wealthy. Did you ever consider doing that?
Never.
Selling them on the open
market? We always thought if there was an emergency, like open heart surgery or something like that, we would do that, but... Now, with Medicare, I don't think we'd have to worry about open heart surgery. We might have to worry about home care. I don't know.
Well, Herb, you have had some problems, physical problems. In the film, you look like you're suffering a bit. Now you're in a wheelchair, and that must make it harder to get around. Do you still go to all the studios? You have to climb the stairs?
No, don't go to studios anymore. We hardly go to any galleries. Our collecting days are really over.
So you're not one of those collectors who try to manipulate the art market. There was a piece in the New York Times recently about Jose Mugrabi and his sons who bought lots of a particular artist's work to create a scarcity and drive up the prices.
We had nothing
to do with
that.
That's like buying gold.
We had nothing to do with the art market. I hardly followed it. I read the papers, and that's about it.
Did you talk to dealers, Migobi, about...
Yes, I did, but not too many. I tried to reach them, and they're very difficult to reach. And John Weber, who I interviewed for the film, and you see him there, was the only one who I could capture on camera. And but mostly, I think dealers are very favorable. They love Herb and Dorothy, and they have a great respect for them.
Do you still have work in your apartment?
We have a few, yes, because we buy to live with it. So my husband needs art around him. I do too, so we still have some art.
Because you decided to give your entire collection to the National Gallery of Art in Washington. And I was wondering, why there? Why not one of the New York museums?
I can answer the question many different ways. We did not give everything to the National Gallery. The National Gallery has around 1,000, or promised 1,000.
You had 1,000 pieces to give them?
Well, we're giving 2,500 to 50 different museums throughout the United States. For every state, there's a museum we've selected, and we've given 50 works to each of these museums. That's 2,500 works. So add the 1,000 going to the National Gallery, then like 500 here or there might be like, we say around 4,000 works.
Are there any certain works that you consider your best finds, things that no one would have expected to become so important?
That's hard to answer. I can't answer that.
Because there are some artists, a number of the artists say that you always honed in on the most difficult works, that if it was accessible, you weren't interested, which probably is one of the reasons that the collection was such a success. But at the same time, that takes a special knack, doesn't it?
Well, it took a lot of hard work and research. We just didn't go into a studio and buy something and walk out. It took a lot of work selecting works, working with the artist, making selections, and finally deciding which one we wanted. It wasn't just as simple as just walking in and walking out with something.
Mm-hmm. So it took
a lot of time, yeah.
A listener asks, Laura, in fact, leaves a question on our show page, do you have any general advice or wisdom for somebody who wants to collect the way you did? Would it even be possible if you started up today?
I don't know, because we lived in a different time. There weren't as many galleries, and there were plenty of artists, but I'm so overwhelmed by the amount of galleries right now. So I don't know if we could do what we did then.
And the art world has changed a lot. The kind of art that's being made today is quite different from the art that was being made when you did.
A lot of installation work, and it's a different world.
Still, art was getting very big in the 60s. In fact, mm-hmm. got very big in the 50s.
That's true.
And you were still thinking small. So was that something that really helped because you were buying the more intimate pieces that these artists were making?
It was a challenge. But many times we would have like a drawing if we couldn't have the major sculpture. Sometimes we'd have the plans to do a major sculpture if we had the room. So like with Sal Lewitt, we didn't have all the walls to put all the wall drawings. I think we had like 5 or 6 wall drawings in the collection. There are 2 up right now in Washington. And you didn't have to put them up when you bought it. You bought the certificate that you could put them up.
Now, the wall drawings, he would do the drawings, and then actually they would take that as the model, and his and other people would then put them on a wall. There are museums around the country that have the versions of the wall drawings that you owned.
Well, our ones we own are unique. There might be ones that are similar. But Sal had his own group of people who went around putting them up for him. Originally, he said anybody can put them up, but then when he saw how badly some of them did it, he had his own crew of people that executed them. I put ours up in the bathroom myself, but he came and said it was he liked it, so it was accepted. But after that, I think he wanted certain people to put them up. You just can't buy one and put it up yourself.
Well, you know, the very idea of putting a solo in my bathroom, that's kind of exciting. You suggested earlier that this film might not have actually become a success because it was so hard to get some of the things that you needed for a film. Right. Did you ever despair over the 4 years you were working on it?
All the time, constantly. And I think the biggest lesson that I learned from the course of the production of this film is that not to make enemies out of obstacles or problems or restrictions, and rather you have to welcome it. And I think towards the very end, I finally learned how to make a use of those problems, because those problems can force you to be more creative. And those problems can force you to be working harder. So I think I learned how to work around those problems.
Did you find that people were watching what you were buying and then following your lead?
I'm not sure. Probably.
Because at a certain point, you did have develop a real reputation for having great eyes. I'm sure that now that so many of these artists have become among the most important of their time.
But not every artist in the collection became well known. So there are artists, and they're fairly unknown at this time.
You also have lots of cats, fish, and turtles.
One cat.
Oh, were the cats okay with the art? Because that can be a problem.
It could be, but we're very careful where we place works, so they were not accessible to the cats.
Now, the film, Megumi, is opening at 2 theaters here in New York on Friday. How long a run?
I hope it goes as long as
they're not limited runs, so that's great.
No, it's not, yes. And then we're going to be attending Q&A this weekend, Friday, Saturday, at 5 o'clock show at Cinema Village. And 2:50 on Sunday. So I hope three of us are going to be there for Q&A.
And people who live uptown can see the film at the Beekman Theater as
That's
well.
That's right.
And I thank you so much for being with us. Herb and Dorothy, which opens this Friday at the Cinema Village in the Beekman Theater, directed by Megumi Sasaki and starring a lot of artwork and, of course, Herb and Dorothy Vogel. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.